Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand. Man, we have to get rid of him. This is all over again. You know, nobody's pushing me anymore, okay? I mean, you not to call nobody in there. I mean, you're better to push us out of here. But don't send your people after me. We can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other. We got to come out on both levels at the same time in order for this whole thing to work. Because nobody's closing me out of the room.
You know what? As I think about my beautiful black people, I think about all the struggles that we've gone through for years, for centuries, how strong we've been. Somewhere I saw a saying, and it said, we have done so much with so little for so long, we are now qualified to do anything with nothing. So the attempts by these oppressors will not stop us. They will not deter us as we march towards freedom. You know, you don't know what time it is. It's that time. I'm Eric Citizen Payne, Kay's son, and this is Kay's Son and Friends, with my boy Byron Saunders and Wayne Gilman, and legendary newsman, a legendary historian. And they should understand, those who would stand in our way, that nothing will stop us. A lot of signs I've been getting lately, trying to get this at a decent volume. A lot of signs I've been getting lately about revolution, about our people. I had an audition the other day, right, for this project about Emmett Till. I auditioned for the part of his uncle, whose house they came to, whose Emmett was saying to Mose Wright. So when I audition for shows like this or watch shows like that, it obviously puts me in a mood. It's painful, as it would be to any other ethnic group who has to talk about the genocide of their people and have to try and bring that to light, as would be stories about the Holocaust would perhaps be painful to our Jewish friends. Things about what happened to our Native American brothers and sisters and so forth all over the world. Things that are going on to the Asian American community, Asian brothers and sisters. And so as I was thinking about, you know, it gets you a little pissed off that I'm in this character. I'm saying the words, don't want to, as I rehearse about it and work on it, don't want to get too involved because the emotion is already there, right? And then it was the day before George Floyd's anniversary, so I didn't really watch a lot of stuff about that yesterday because it was getting to be a little bit much. You know, I was in this headspace, did this audition. And if you think about what happened with Emmett Till, I watched a little Ed Bradley's interview from 2004 on YouTube when he found out, did a recap of what happened to Emmett, and, you know, discovered that the woman who lied about him whistling or harassing her, whatever, he did whistle, but she added a lot more onto it. She's still alive. She was still alive at that point, had changed her name or got married again and was living somewhere else in Mississippi. Good old Ed goes to try to interview her. You have to watch yourself. I'm not going to tell you what happens. But that, those two things in combination got me heated. And the more researching on social media, even more, I came across something, a story, an issue about something called paramour rights. And it was a story about this black woman who, let me just bring up the official definition of paramour rights so you can see how utterly barbaric savage it is. And Byron, I'm sure you're going to get into this a lot more. Laretha McCullen, Paramore writes, this is the definition if you Google it, refers to the assumption that white men have a right to use black women for sex, regardless of whether they are willing, married, or with somebody else. Laretha McCullen was a woman who was getting abused by a white man in the Jim Crow era. So she was sentenced to death, avoided the execution, it says, and she was eventually moved to a mental state hospital, freed in 1974, and she died in 1992. Didn't know that part. But this doctor was abusing her. Every time her husband would go out of town, this white doctor would come over, abuse her, exercise this paramour rights. I'm getting heated even talking about it. These devils. And if anybody's listening to me, too bad. Too bad. Face up to your history. Face up to the history of the country. And if it bothers you, if you happen to be white, if it makes you uncomfortable, that's good, right? Because either one of two things is going to happen. It's going to make you uncomfortable, and you're not going to identify with that. You're going to think that as barbaric as any decent, reasonable-minded human being, person who follows God. And if it makes you uncomfortable where you don't want to talk about it, well, maybe there's some things you need to research about yourself. Maybe you believe in this whole system of white supremacy that has been inflicted on the United States. So combined, I couldn't really, you know, get out of that headspace. Couldn't watch any of the events about George Floyd and the whole thing that the media wants to do and so they can get paid off of that. But I took solace in the fact that the grand jury in New York City and homegirl Tish James and Cyrus Vance are going to have a 45 convene a grand jury for him. But those are some of the things that was going on inside of me. And, you know, when you get to a certain age as an African-American, at least for me, and I'm sure Wayne and Byron could attest, you don't got time. You're not trying to hear the BS no more that these people run down. They're trying to change history. We're going to get into that. They're trying to rewrite history. But it's been all over the place. I've watched a number of news stories, and when you watch them separately, you don't see it. But I'm seeing it like a big puzzle come together, this attack on critical race theory, the banning, the allowing of guns. Texas, anyone 21, because they want all the white cats to have guns anytime. That's what I think. Because a dude today just killed a bunch of his coworkers, white dude. But here that there's a number of states easing the restrictions on guns, people allowing it. So what's the plan, the overall plan? Rewrite history. January 6th never happened. Get rid of critical race theory. There's bills in several states to get rid of this critical race theory, to reexamine the approach to civil rights and the whole issue of race in this country. And people are against it. And one guy in Oklahoma, of all places, is passing a bill, state legislature. Wrote a bill, and in it was some of the language of, so some people don't feel bad or guilty hearing some of this history. Of all places in Oklahoma, this guy is passing this. So you see, these are messages, man, clearly, like we talked about in Georgia with Kemp signing that bill, the anti-voting or the voting restriction bill, in front of with a bunch of white dudes in front of picture of an old plantation. These are signals. So, you know, you got to watch all of these signs because you see what they're trying to do and pull all of these things together. Here, as we have approached and arrived at the one-year anniversary yesterday of the murder of George Floyd. So those are the things that have been on my mind. We'll bring in Byron, the legendary historian. Give me a little context. What's up, Byron? How you doing?
Well, I feel your mood this evening, and I'm doing well. You know, I'm down here in Washington, D.C., and participating in measuring all that is coming out of the Capitol Hill and the Senate and Congress and the White House, but also recognizing that place that you just referenced being in your audition. I know the story well. I played the role of the uncle, Mose, you know, and just the mere thought of that individual going into the funeral home with Emmett's mother to identify the body. And I got to tell you, the lines that were written for that piece that I did, Whistle Down Mississippi, in New York, it shakes you to your bone. Because to be that picture that you saw in Jet magazine,
as a kid,
iconic image of Emmett Till having been abused to the point beyond recognition, an abomination of humanity just gone out of control. You have to begin to ask yourself, what kind of human being does this to another human? Mm-hmm. And then you begin to realize the depth of the cruelty of slavery, because that was not just a one-time happening. It was a lot. It's been documented.
Look at the pictures of set people on fire.
Questions. Yes. It is literally the kind of evilness that begin to understand that Malcolm was identifying who the devil was. And let's be clear, people, the kind of cruelty inflicted on other human beings as a result of slavery, whether in India with the British, whether in Haiti with the French, whether in the United States with Southern crackers. That image, that inhumanity, you will think ultimately who Satan really is.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not pulling no punches on that, because like I said, having done that play, you're right, Eric. It takes you into a dark place.
Yeah. The scene that I auditioned with was where he had to tell Mamie what happened.
Yes.
He's sitting out in an area where he would like to go and think out in nature, and imagine having to tell your greatness. And let me also say this about this project. His name is Mose, right?
Yeah.
You and I know that. The man's name is Mose, not Moses.
Mose.
Oh, maybe it was Moses, but when I saw in the documentary and they showed his mailbox, it said Mose. Ed Bradley. Mm-hmm. Ed's not going to get it mm-hmm. wrong. He's going to say Mose. But these individuals that wrote this script, and God bless them for doing this, had him named Moses. So my thing is that even in that you're presenting our history, at least get it correct. At least get it
That's
correct.
Right.
So when I said my name before the audition, I said the man's correct name. I don't give a damn about getting this job. If you people are going to try to write about our history, at least have the respect to get the man's name right.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I want to bring Wayne in to, he's got some input, of course, that he wants to jump in here with. Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. How you doing tonight, Wayne?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen, man. Eric, you put a pall over my head. I've told people, and maybe I've said this before, I've forgotten, the Emmett Till case is like one of my, and I hate to use it as a source of inspiration, but it was just one of the many things that inspired me to get into journalism. You know, my
you used it
mom
as a,
and,
as a fire.
Was
that's what it was, Wayne. You don't worry about that. It was a source of inspiration because you saw that, wanted to do something about the disgusting treatment of your people here. Of course, it was inspiration.
And I had forgotten about, I had heard about the Paramore Rights business, but it had been so long ago, and. You know, there's so many different schools of thoughts about it, but I remember distinctly, and I don't know if we could get Al Sharpton to confirm this, but some historian who had gone through a genealogy examination of Sharpton's background found out that he was related to Strom Thurmond, the segregationist.
Right, I heard that.
And Thurmond was a big advocate of Paramore rights.
Well, yeah, that
so
one
when
one
you
prison,
connect
right?
the dots, I'm not saying this with any disrespect to Al, but, you know, I kind of wonder, you know, what goes on. And the thing is, there was miscegenation. There was genuine miscegenation between the races. Maybe there was something that might have been, you know, again, my grandfather was someone of white ancestry. He was from Scotland, you know, and I didn't know about the racial aspect just watching his interaction with my grandmother. But when you fast forward it and his reasons for leaving the United States because of the volume of the bigotry, and I know I've said this before when your mom was around, how he couldn't even walk down 125th Street with his mulatto kids without being arrested. And I think that just set the tone right there, you know, that America might have been a place for opportunity, but there's such a huge price, such a huge freaking tuition. And I say with all due respect, Eric, I was in a good mood before I picked up the phone to call you about the – I've been so excited about the Nets. All due praises to my cousin-in-law, Ime Udoka, who's the assistant coach. And, you know, and when I hear this, this just takes me back, man. And it's deep. It's deep, and I didn't know that's what you were pursuing, you know, but I can understand how you feel. I can relate to it.
Information. It seems that every single day that we're alive, there's another incident that we're learning about. Incident of Greenwood or Tulsa, Osceola, Florida, Byron? And Mr. July Perry,
are you familiar? You're breaking up. I'm sorry, Eric. I couldn't follow you. You were breaking up. And what happened in Florida, in Osceola, Florida?
Osceola, Florida, I think they don't talk about this, but there was a man named July Perry who had a lot of land, and he was a wealthy, hard-working brother around that time. I guess Jim Crow, after slavery, he built up his land, things like that. Apparently, I didn't watch. I got to watch it again because doing things. But they, the Greenwood or Tulsa, Oklahoma number on this area of this area, Florida, and this particular right. black man who was leader in the community, they brutalized him and took his land and everybody else's land in this area. To this day, it is a place where black people catch a little bit of hell trying to live. And so all these issues, you know, yeah, you know, games and all that stuff, but, you know, it pisses me off. It pisses me off as much as when I hear this idiot troll that's a congressman talking about wearing masks equal to the Holocaust. I'm not Jewish. I got Jewish friends, but just about justice, humanity. And it's a clear sign that these people are planning something sooner. They're planning to try to reverse things. If you pay attention to all the signs that they're trying to do, 50% of the people that aren't vaccinated that aren't vaxxed are in those southern states, Mississippi, Arkansas, Florida, Louisiana. 50% of people that aren't, you know, in those areas, 50%. Are not vaccinated. A majority of Republicans think that Joe Biden is not the real president and Donald is, base Republicans. So, and these individuals in power are feeding that because that's the only way they know to get back power. And that's why, on the other hand, the big piece of the puzzle, they're trying to restrict voting rights for black people while at the same time rewriting history, not allowing truthstory to be told, but they want their history to be told, while at the same time on the Capitol changing the narrative of what happened on January 6th and saying it was you know, the left in support of, perpetuate the left acting like they were Republicans and all of these kind of lies, or some saying, you know, had actual congressmen said they were just a bunch of tourists. They were like a bunch of tourists. So all of these things coming together, these cats are trying to make it pop off again. That's why they refuse. That's why they don't want to have a January 6th commission. It's unbelievable. And the only solace, Wayne, why don't you talk about the good news, Wayne, that your boy Don Trump, the grand jury, you could speak to that.
Oh, please. I mean, and I guess that's just the tip of the iceberg, because even though the grand jury was called, you know, it just goes to show this is a criminal investigation. Got nothing to do with politics whatsoever. This concerns this man's business history. This is not just criminal, but it concerns his businesses and the unethical way he goes about doing things. And we're just beginning to see this thing unravel. Party, the majority of them that still back this, you know, 45, for lack of wanting to say something vulgar, you know, they would have to have their head examined. You're right. I can't help but feel that there is a conspiratorial effort on the part of an element within this country just to try to see, you know, one last shot for the Gipper to turn the clock back to how things once were, you know. And thank God we were able to bring about some semblance of stability with the election of Joe Biden. It's not perfect, you know. He and Kamala Harris have their work cut out for him. But getting back to what's going on in New York, this is just phase one. And I can't wait to see what comes out of it, you know. And he's constantly on the tube talking to his minions and all of his followers saying, oh, it's another witch hunt, you know, like what he did the last 4 years. And once you hear this constant bombardment of witch hunt and jealousy and what people think of me because I'm so on and so forth, you know, it's hysterical. It's incomprehensible that we had somebody running this freaking country. And I still say this to this day. I said it this past weekend on somebody else's air, and I say it again tonight. I lost a whole year of my life, all of us, in 2020, in addition to the lives that we lost, 500,000 people that we lost just in this country alone, because of this man's indolence, his inability to keep a watch on what was handed to him about the possibilities of this kind of pandemic activity happening. And he chose to politicize the whole thing and act like nothing happened. And there's empirical evidence. There is evidence, not just stuff that he knew about, but there have been countless interviews in which he said he knew, you know, and felt, well, this was my way of anesthetizing the pain by lying to the public. I mean, I just can't imagine that we went through 4 years of this crap. So what's coming down the pike now here in New York, as I said, is the tip of the iceberg. You know, we still need to get into Georgia with this crap, and Florida, and everywhere else that his tentacles have touched, you know, businesses, the environment, and the politics of this country. People need to see for themselves, you know. Because obviously, as long as we have these players like the Rupert Murdochs and all the others that want to distort, you know, the reality, we're going to have this bedlam. You know, there's legislation before the Texas legislature right now in which they want to say that it's okay to have firearms, whether they're licensed or not. Mm-hmm. And then less than 48 hours, we have this massacre in San Jose. You know, I mean, hey, man, you know, I hate to be talking this way, and I know I mentioned this last week, but, you know, I know we have a right to bear arms, but it's really getting crazy. Do you really wish to do that?
They're trying to arm their people. They're trying to make sure their people are armed. It's clear what they're trying to do. They're trying to make sure that, and I'm going to say it, I think that individuals like Mike Abbott and a lot of these other racists in the Republican Party are trying to make sure as many white people have guns as possible. And that's fine, but they're trying to make sure as many white racist people, let me just say that, I'll correct that because, you know, not all white people are racist, obviously, and buy into the system. So they're trying to make sure that as many white racist supremacists as possible have guns. And to lower it to 21, because if you notice, a lot of the wild activity, Proud Boys and all these cats, there's a large number of young white guys that you know, they attach themselves to this notion. And the fact that they are attacking all of these attempts at education, like I said, this law restricting critical race theory, where this guy has said, where no one has complained about it, you know, I'm just skimming through the article in Oklahoma. No one has complained about critical race theory being taught. However, it's become a hot button issue, as they say, and this legislator has decided to introduce this bill because he says the law prohibits educators from his law would prohibit educators from teaching concepts that could cause students to feel uncomfortable or responsible for actions their race or sex committed in the past. It also forbids schools from teaching that people are inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive due to their race or sex. Of course, they're not inherently that way. But he didn't want little white kids to feel uncomfortable because they might be the same color as some terrorists. But I bet you still and yet they'll be running them commercials or the news stories when a black person might rob something or whatever. I bet you still and yet all of those negative images of black people are still within their textbooks. And this is in Oklahoma where Tulsa happened. So It's clear that they want to perpetuate and continue white supremacy. And I don't think that it's going to be one last hurrah. I think they're going to be trying it and trying it and trying it again until they're dead and gone. You know, just like Charlton Heston said when he proved who he was, when he said, I have to come pry my rifle from my cold, dead white hands. You know, hey, okay. You know why? You know, it's like, why was that in there? Okay, but obviously people speak about things that are really on their mind, you know, and it's unbelievable. This law would make it illegal, and teachers could go to jail for teaching this. Unbelievable. For us trying to, at one time, it was illegal to teach slaves to read, too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So if you look at all these things, let the dudes have the guns, let's continue the big lie that, you know, these guys were patriots on January 6th and all this other lunacy. And you get this idiotic broad talking about wearing masks is equal to the Holocaust. And we got some of ours that are like that, too. You remember when Ben Carson said that forcing people to do, I forget what it was, taxes or something like that, was akin to slavery. So we got...
Let me tell you something, Eric. I'm going to ask, I mean, if, God forbid, you were suffering from a brain tumor, would you call Carson to operate on you? I mean,
that's a good
God
question.
Forbid. I'm just saying, this man's credibility as a medical doctor is embarrassing. And it's sad that we have elements like that and Tim Scott and all the others out there. You know what I mean? It's just bothersome with all that is so blatantly obvious about the frailties of our system and the fact that, you know, these people are destroying the country, but yet they find some comfort and solace in promoting something that does not exist. And with all the accolades that Carson once had prior to entering politics, you know, just saddens me to know because – you know, at one time you would think that he could walk on water, the kind of print and press coverage that he was getting back in the day. And then when he really came out politically and he ran for the presidency, of course, you know, party affiliation at first glimpse did not seem to be apparent to me. But when he and again, we're not a monolith. The black community is not a monolith. So, yes, we have some conservative elements in our community. But when it comes down to some of the things he was talking about and what he did to the Department of Housing and Urban Development in his 4 years under Trump. I mean, it's just sad, you know. And his license should be revoked.
I don't. I don't know about all that, but in my estimation, we need to be a monolith on certain subjects. I'm gonna say it. We need to all be in agreement that we need to be free. You know what I'm saying? And those of y'all like Harriet Tubman, like, you know, our icon Harriet Tubman, if you ain't going to be free, she's going to let you have it because you wasn't going to go back and spill the beans to the oppressor. She was going to put you down. And so we do need to be a monolith arm. You need to be a monolith arm. You're not going to put your hands on our women. You're not going to put your hands on our kids with impunity. That's the problem. There's no consequence. Oh, and when you do certain things and you're taking certain actions, then you should lose the authority that people give you, that they acquiesce to your authority, because we're all supposed to be operating under the same constitution and the same rules. But clearly, what else am I to assume when every time we talk about that, there seems to be a double standard? Clearly, it tells me that it was never meant to work in the first place, or it was just a ploy, or just a whole pimp game. Come on, man. I see what's going on. Now the question is, how do we react? And ironically, I just happened to come across Malcolm in Ballad or the Bullet speech, you know? And ironically, I happened to catch up on my episodes of Godfather of Harlem, and it happened to be an episode where he wrote that speech. He was thinking about delivering it. So, yeah, maybe I'm supposed to be talking harsh today. Maybe I'm supposed to be putting it down like that today. Because we need to get a little bit more heated about things. You know, when something comes out of somebody's mouth, they need to be checked on it one way or another. You know, I mean, this is real talk. These cats are trying to rewrite the history on January 6th. I seen some of the same dudes rioting at the Capitol that give me high fives at the Giants game. You guys heard me say that joke only before. But, you know, the same dudes give me high fives when the Giants score a touchdown. Same type of individuals, you know? Mm. So what's our strategy? Is our strategy going to be continue with politics, or we need to have a strategy on all fronts, which is why I think that Malcolm was taken out, because he was getting ready to unite with the other ministers of different faiths and have the one thing that we all do agree upon. We may, like you said, we may disagree in terms of philosophy. We're not a monolith in terms of philosophy and religion, but we need to be a monolith on the freedom of our people and what we need to do to achieve it. So that's what a critical race theory is, one that's going to teach that education. Kind of like my father's Amistad legislation when I started hearing about critical race theory. You know, making sure the correct history, true story is told. You know? I don't know, as a historian, Byron, what's your perspective about critical race theory, if you're familiar with it? If we have you
well,
on.
1619 Project.
Mm-hmm. And they're trying to...
was created to rebuke what white historians have written about slavery and America and correct it in a way in which, on a timeline, specifically points out those moments in American history where they literally, white folks destroyed our communities. You were speaking about the Ocoee incident in 1921 in Florida, where they, the true story in which the white folks got upset with a gentleman in Ocoee and decided to just go do what they did in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and destroyed the black town. So it's recorded. It's one of those recording things that all across the country, we've got documented evidence of lynchings, of destruction of Tulsa, Oklahoma, of Rosewood, of Detroit, of Moon. You know, I mean, you know, at the point of which the 1619 Project is instead of filibustering in Congress, reading us green eggs and hams and the ridiculousness of a filibuster concept anyway. You know what? Read the 1619 Project. Start educating these back-ass, backwards rednecks. Because they need to know the history. They need to hear it in public record. And if they refuse to indicate in our history books, then, you know, don't buy the Texas Book Depository books that are being filtered throughout the entire nation's public educational system, in which those books continue to tell the lie about America, about its race issues, about a lot of things that they don't want you to know. But it's high time that we peel back the onion to reveal the real truth about America. Jefferson ran with, what was that terminology that you said ultimately? Paramore? Come on. Thomas Jefferson.
Paramore rights.
Paramore rights took Sally Hansen, 14 years old, to Paris and with him and made her his concubine. That's the real story, America. That's the Jefferson that you keep honoring. George Washington had 300 slaves. Okay? That's the American story. So, you know, the revelation of truth, 1619 Project, is only bringing forward a truth that America has been denying for since 1619. That's why it's thus called the 1619 Project. So you get upset because you hear the truth of your country? Well, you know, damn you. If you can't handle the truth, get out of the kitchen. Because we are here. We're not leaving. And we're going to put this and rub your noses in every single time we have to. Because your denial is ruining what should be an ideal concept of democracy, but it's not. It's tainted. It's perverted. So now we have to clean it up.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
what's going
on. I mean, it's individuals that people talk about democracy and the land of opportunity and mentioned that earlier. But this was the land of opportunity for who? Clearly, it wasn't supposed to be the land of opportunity for us. The opportunities that came to us were as a residual effect of the country evolving and people battling against slavery, black and white. Can you imagine the white person who back in the day who was sitting in the meeting and said, "You guys want to do what? You want to make people's what? What is wrong with you?" And to look around and realize that there were probably one or two other people in the room who thought that was a messed up idea. You know, and I can.
You know, here's a primary example of the 1619 idea and why it's so necessary. I'm going to an event on Saturday in Howard County, Maryland, that's honoring a individual for whom my aunt did the research for Howard County in Ellicott City, Maryland, documenting black experiences in Howard County, Maryland. And they're honoring this gentleman because my aunt did the research, God rest her soul, and was discovered accidentally that the county had the archival collection because it was hiding under a tablecloth in which all this information was there but not being properly stored and cared for. So now, by the miracle of the gods of the spirit world itself, has brought me, a historian, to my aunt's work as a collection of the presence of African Americans in Howard County. And that's going to be live streaming on Saturday, in which I'm asked to speak on my aunt's behalf. Now, I'm honored. I'm really honored to be participating in it, but I'm also, as a historian, have to tell the people, y'all gonna have to take care of this material better, because if you're gonna be the home of this kind of history, then you must spend the money to preserve it like you preserve all your other history. So Governor Northam, yes, he's a Republican, and this is under his watch. And so we, you see, we can begin to heal what everybody's saying we need to heal our nation, but you cannot heal anything with lies, obfuscation, distortions of the truth. Truth and lies cannot run concurrent and be representative of facts of the of an incident. It has to be based in truth, and it has to be based in facts. And that means the good, the bad, and the ugly. So wipe away your tears, America, because the truth is going to set us free. And if it doesn't, this will be the shortest-lived empire in the history of global empires.
Well, you know, it has to go with people wanting that to happen. And there's individuals in the country clearly that don't want that to happen. They want to take it back to Jim Crow era. I think that some obviously wouldn't mind if it was slavery again, black people were slaves again. Clearly, that's kind of the mentality that a lot of these individuals have. And wouldn't bat an eye at it. Wouldn't bat an eye. You know, I mean, their perspectives about trying to change the debate with January 6th. These pet cats were literally running for their life, but now it's a whole different thing. So, you know,
how hypocritical, you know, to deny that you participated in the worst domestic terrorist, second only to the Tulsa massacre, 1921, celebrating 100th anniversary this year.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped bombs on that city.
Yep.
From a dual-wing airplane, dropping bombs to destroy the richest black town in America, all because of racism.
Mm-hmm.
Show me the record where that has happened, where black people have destroyed their town. Does not happen. It ain't in no book anywhere in this country. But
I'm sorry, Byron. I'm thinking of Philadelphia and Wilson Good when they dropped bombs. You know, again, racism there. And a black man at the helm of that time, it still bothers me today.
That wasn't black people. That wasn't black people destroying a whole town, Wayne.
The concept of dropping bombs on an entire black community just to expel them.
Was that
Frank
Rizzo?
That was
it's racist.
Rizzo was the police chief? Wasn't he the police chief? Frank Rizzo?
Oh, yeah. Oh, please. You know.
The two uncomparable, bro. In a vacuum, yes. Bomb drop. They dropped a bomb on an incendiary device on an area. But is what makes it comparable is the fact that I think that the decision was Frank Rizzo's and Wilson Good was covering for him because he was the mayor at the time, if we remember correctly. I don't know. You would know better than I because you were a news. Obviously, it was happening when you guys were on the air. So, but as I remember, that Wilson Good kind of wanted to look like he was the mayor and he was aware of it. I don't know if he okayed that, unless you have some other information
To me, again, yes, we know of Rizzo's history. But
right.
The fact of the matter is the mayor in any particular town, and I'm not saying that there wasn't differences between the police department and the executive branch, because it goes on here, you know. Every municipality there's always who's controlling the department, you know, is it Cuomo, is it de Blasio, you know, I mean, if we just want to fast forward things. But the fact that happened on a black man's watch and Wilson being the first African-American to have that position, you know, and unfortunately it was like when I remember covering it, you know, it was mind-boggling that this was actually happening and so many people were victims of this. But, you know, I don't think enough was ever said about how this was done. You know, and again, the fact I'm juxtaposing this whole issue with race, as Byron pointed out, with Rosewood in Florida, Tulsa in Oklahoma, that, you know, it's always about expulsion. And even if they get one of us to give the okay, let's drop the bomb, you know, it's the thing that I find so disconcerting about our history here, you know? And it's, again, there's a commonality there with the, a thin commonality there with respect to the whole issue of race. But, of course, the impact, you know, I was watching a show the other day in which this Jewish woman who was a victim of the Holocaust was still getting paid for reparations. And they didn't mention how much money she was getting from the German government. But she was being paid because the government acknowledged monthly, weekly, what they did to her and her family in World War II. Is this wealthy country we call the United States that can give out stimulus checks and all sorts of little trinkets to different people of interest, and we can't get reparations for ourselves, that we have to suffer through crap like that, you know? And I'm not saying that she's not worthy of getting what's going on, you know, what she had to live through. God forbid if any of us have to go through. But we have our own Holocaust there. I wasn't a part of it, and my family, to my knowledge, wasn't a part of it. But we came here to have an impact on what was sold to us as America the Beautiful, as an immigrant family. And it ain't so pretty. That's the problem.
In my estimation, I'm not really concerned about the Jewish lady. I understand your point. Getting back to the dropping bomb, in my estimation, from my perspective, mentioning one with the other seems to, for me, might suggest to people that there's some sort of equality between the two acts, and there is equality in the fact that a bomb, an incendiary device, was dropped. Yes. However, when you look at the whole context of Tulsa, Greenwood, all of these areas that we talked about, the entire context makes them completely different to me. And also with Philadelphia, yeah, there were a group of black people, but we had, I believe, that Frank the racist, Frank Rizzo, who was the former mayor, who probably had his tentacles more throughout the infrastructure of the city government, of course, with the police force, because he was head of the police force as well at one time, was an attempt to annihilate black people once again. You had a black man at the time that was, I guess, head of the executive branch. But to me, when you bring up that in context with those incidences, I think certain people would say, well, you guys did it to yourself, so what was – it kind of makes it okay. And it's not okay. I don't think it's the equivalent.
Exactly.
You're talking about entire cities that were thriving, and in the situation of Greenwood, North Carolina, was they were overrun by a city that was a diverse city that had probably the majority of black people in the elected positions, but it was diverse. And still these racist individuals burned the whole thing down, and wiped it off the face of the map. So for my money, the two aren't comparable. Those examples, you could make a correlation, but for me, on the real, no, they're not comparable. Because we're talking about a whole...
Well, I understand the sense of what Tulsa is
continuing. And even with what they how they use Nelson Wilson Good, it continues. I don't think that, I understand the points that you were making, the few points that might make them similar. But to me, man, for my money, that stuff is diabolical. And there's very little that I would say that would let individuals off the hook, so to speak, that would look back on their history and try to find some sort of justification for those things back then happening to those black people, just as they would look
for. And to make it worse, Eric, worse, is that they created events that were like field days, picnics,
mm-hmm.
events where they were selling postcards. You know,
right? We don't need a record. They created the record. Yeah.
They created the postcard. We don't need a historical record. They created the record. They got postcards of black men burning on fire.
That's right.
People cutting off their ears and their limbs and their nose. The one where they hung up the black woman upside down who was pregnant, cut the fetus, the baby, unborn baby out of her stomach, and stomped on the baby. There is no comparison.
There is no comparison, and that's why when you begin to reveal that kind of ugly truth, you cannot stand in good stead in the well of Congress and deny that this is America. Your hypocrisy is worse than the stench of every species that you rubbed on the wall in your insurrection. How dare you, Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Getz, all of you all, sit there in your pompous, arrogant whiteness and white supremacy. That's all it is. You got to call it out for what it really is.
I would have
mentioned. And then you send out a sycophant and a Tim Scott who you just know is going to finally will break him down. We can break this brother down, okay?
Hmm.
But Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, y'all really going to accept his proposal? Y'all have already turned back the need for a January 6th commission. You turn your backs on the nation. You really expect us for Tim Scott to be your standard bearer and believe him? You must think we got Bobo the Clown written on our forehead. He's just a handkerchief-head MF, mother's finest, who wants to get out there and get his little taste of power, but he ain't going nowhere. And I don't care, you could put him as the only Republican candidate running for president, and he won't win 75 million votes. I can guarantee you that. Because to him, to the Republican Party, they're just another nigger. Period.
I'm interested to know, Wayne, the racism in the rest of the world, right? I mean, living from the island where you came from, and many of our other brothers and sisters that might have lived on the islands in other parts of the world, you know, the white supremacy struck in different manners, right? And I'm just curious, what, from your perspective, was the historical perspective? If there was, maybe it wasn't in the island that you and your family came from, but was there some effect of amount maybe of colonialism to a certain degree, or some of the islands are, you know, some are American are American islands, and some are under British, right? Like you have the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Well, I mean, the thing is, all the European countries, because you were breaking up a minute ago, had their own empire. You had the Spanish Empire, you had the British Empire, and by the time America got involved with the Caribbean, you know, they were forced to be reckoned with. You know, they set up little places in certain countries strategically to fight what was considered communism or anything that opposed their thinking, you know, America's thinking. That was it. Unlike the United States, a lot of these places were still under colonial rule. Even where my family's from in Trinidad and Tobago was under Spanish rule, went under French rule, Spanish again, and then finally, before they finally got independence, it was under British rule. And the indoctrination, the culture of Great Britain, and all these different colonialists who had some involvement in the development of these islands back in the day, have left their impact and their imprint. You know, I know Byron has cited from time to time the whole issue of what went on in Haiti and its connection to the United States and you know, the problems that have gone on to this day on the whole island of Hispaniola. But, you know, there was a bill of goods that was sold to people who were seeking independence and felt that America was a lot different. I'm going back generations now, because they hadn't gotten their independence, the Caribbean islands, until the 60s. So when my family started leaving, and people that they heard who came to the States were doing well, they figured, well, gee, I'd probably be running around, and I hate to use the analogy of Tarzan, but, you know, it ain't too far from that when you stop and think about the opportunities that we probably would not have gotten staying under colonial rule as opposed to coming to the States. So I understood why they came here, but the problem is that America had its own version of racism and colonialism to a certain extent, even though they said it was free and all that. But if you're not aware of these things and you get here and then you find out, well, gee, I was mistold a bill of goods here. You know, somebody told me that I would have an opportunity to be equal, and I'm not really equal. And even if I got an education and I was able to get through the system and be of equal status, educationally speaking, the opportunities weren't the same. You know, maybe I might have lived a little better, but they still weren't the same. But you had to come here to find that out. You know, when you're on the other side, you know, catching hell, and you feel that your life would not have the kind of value that you would have been told it would have had by coming here, it's a different story. So I understand, to a certain extent, you know, some of us fell for something that just never existed. And this goes on today. I'm not just talking about the Caribbean, Central America, South America. People are still coming here. People from Europe. You know, it's the same thing.
So but what they're looking at, usually you're fleeing something because what you have at home is worse, right? That's why people walk 2,000 miles. But I totally get it. We got about two and a half minutes to kind of wind it down. But I totally get what you're saying. So your people came here because the home situation wasn't the best, and you could have a better opportunity here. The only problem was back in the day, would that you guys had social media and were able to read the Pittsburgh Courier and Messenger and some other black magazines that W.E.B. Du Bois and all A. Philip Randolph were putting out. Y'all could have known, hey, it ain't all peaches and cream over this.
Thank you. And that's
you
the problem.
You've been able to know, like, okay, we go, but the brother's here writing these papers and setting us some stuff. Hey, why ask when you get off the boat? You know what I mean? I'll add a little bit of levity towards you. Talk about a very serious subject. But, you know, for African-American publications back in those days, when a lot of blacks migrating or immigrating from places like came, even the continent, where they thought it was, you know, it was going to be great when we get to America. And even people from Europe and the Hispanic countries, you know, they probably thought it was going to be peaches and cream, too. And it found out
exactly
some people that it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. And all of a sudden, if they were able to read some contrasting opinions, they probably would have came a little bit more expecting that. We got to go, guys. We've got a minute. Wayne, I want to tell the people, give a sign off. After this,
hey, keeping hope alive, you know. I just hope it just continues to get better. That's all we can hope for.
That is. Well, we're going to make it better, brother. That is Wayne Gilman. Thanks, Wayne. Legendary newsman, WIB. He's going to be in the TV show that we're going to write about black radio back in the day. And Byron is too, but he's going to be the TV correspondent. Byron, you want to get the people to send off, my brother? I got the mic.
Absolutely. Peace and love always. Remember, you have the power. If you're not part of the solution, you are the problem. Use your power and make things happen.
All right. There he is. There is from the legendary historian, Byron Thomas. Talk to you later, baby. All right. This is Kay, Son, and Friends. This is a different version of Brothers Gonna Work It Out. A little bit more updated. This is more how I'm feeling. These are my boys. Eric Citizen Payne, K-Son of Friends. We'll talk to you again soon. I